When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Get 16-ounce packs of flavorful Angus 90% lean ground sirloin for $4.99 each with a digital coupon. Then buy two, get two free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
One chance in 342 million. The law professor kept staring at the number, gaping, in shock. There had been a string of deaths at two local hospitals, and according to his calculations, they were almost certainly murders. The suspect was a 40-year-old nurse named Lucia DeBerk. She was tall and blonde and worked shifts part-time at a children's hospital. There, she had been on hand for several unexplained deaths. The staff quickly grew suspicious. Still, the staff knew that everything might just be due to chance. Perhaps DeBerk was just unlucky in being around when the children died. That's where the law professor came in. He had an undergraduate degree in statistics, so he started running numbers. The results were damning. According to his figures, there was just one chance in 342 million that DeBerk was a victim of bad luck. Put another way, it meant with near certainty that she was a serial killer, the worst serial killer in Holland's history. And the professor was determined that his math would bring her to justice. From the Science History Institute, this is Sam Keen and the Disappearing Spoon, a topsy-turvy, sciencey history podcast, where footnotes become the real story. Lucia DeBerk had a friendly relationship with her fellow nurses, at least on the surface. Many of them gossiped about her behind her back. They made fun of her hippie clothing and her obsession with tarot cards. In fact, DeBerk worked at an elderly care hospital sometimes and often read patients' fortunes on duty, a big no-no. Still, one nurse in particular thought DeBerk was not just flaky, but dangerous. Things came to a head with the sad case of baby Amber. From birth, Amber had suffered from a heart defect and had fluid in her lungs. She could eat only through a tube. In July 2001, at 4 months old, Amber underwent heart surgery. She was also prescribed a drug called Digoxin, which treats congestive heart failure. Both treatments seemed to help. But on September 3rd, Amber began vomiting and had diarrhea. DeBerk was working that day and brought her to pediatricians around 1 a.m. for an examination. Despite her bad day, the doctor said she looked fine. But around 3 a.m., her breathing stopped and her heart flatlined. The pediatricians tried reviving her, but Amber was pronounced dead around 3:30. Her sudden death left the medical staff baffled and heartbroken. What had happened? One nurse was especially upset, partly because the case reminded her of another recent death, that of a baby named Ahmad. The previous January, Ahmad had mysteriously overdosed on sedatives and died after a surgery for stomach problems. Just like Amber, Ahmad was seemingly doing well before a sudden crash. And Lucia DeBerk was working the day he died. Soon, rumors of foul play were flying around the ward. The suspicious nurse finally blew the whistle and told the chief pediatrician. The pediatrician had never liked DeBerk, and quickly recalled three other incidents, more unexplained deaths, when DeBerk was working. Initially, doctors had ruled all those deaths natural if unexplained. But the chief pediatrician now overruled those judgments. She reclassified the deaths as suspicious and told the hospital's director. The director started pulling data about DeBerk's shifts. What he learned sickened him. DeBerk had worked at the hospital 3 years at that point, and in her 134 shifts, there were 8 unexplained deaths. All the other nurses had worked 887 shifts combined, and not a single unexplained death had taken place. The director soon called the elderly care hospital where DeBerk worked. He asked officials there to comb their records. 5 more unexplained deaths popped up. Upon hearing this, the children's hospital director called the police. When confronted, DeBerk professed shock. She swore that all the deaths were natural. Her presence was just random chance, bad luck. But the police didn't buy it. They began investigating and quickly turned up more damning evidence. Again, DeBerk had worked at the Children's Hospital for 3 years by then. For comparison, the police looked into how many unexplained deaths had occurred in the 3 years prior. They found 0. 0 unexplained deaths in 3 years. Then DeBerk shows up and 8 occur? It seemed awfully suspicious. The police also seized DeBerk's diary. In November 1997, she wrote about how she, quote, gave in to her compulsion. And according to hospital records for that day, an elderly cancer patient of hers had died. Once again, the patient had been stable, and her doctor recalled being surprised by the sudden death. The police asked DeBerk about her so-called compulsion. She claimed that her compulsion was the occult, and admitted that she had read tarot cards to the patient that day, against hospital rules. But the police knew better. Her real compulsion was murder. Then the most damning evidence of all came through. Baby Amber had been autopsied, and the hospital had kept as evidence the gauze used to soak up her bodily fluids. Testing the fluids revealed suspiciously high levels of the drug digoxin, a dozen times higher than normal for the amount prescribed. And Lucia DeBerk had a key to the cupboard where the drug was kept. In December 2001, the police arrested DeBerk and charged her with 13 counts of murder. The tabloids went wild. A nurse, a supposed lifesaver, was instead preying on babies and old people. What a monster. The newspapers dug up dirt on her personal life as well. DeBerk had lived in Canada as a young woman and had worked as an escort there. She'd also falsified her credentials to get into nursing school. During all this, DeBerk maintained her innocence. But the police soon brought in the law professor mentioned before, who had a degree in statistics. He ran some numbers and got the figure of 1 in 342 million, a microscopic chance that DeBerk was simply the victim of bad luck. The case shocked the entire Dutch nation. People talked about bringing back public hangings or the firing squad. No punishment would be too harsh for the likes of DeBerk. As the case moved to trial, however, something funny happened. DeBerk's lawyers took a closer look at the 8 alleged murders at the Children's Hospital. Well, it turned out that DeBerk wasn't actually working during 2 of the deaths. She had called in sick once, and another time was out of town. But there was still plenty of evidence to prosecute. The diary, the high concentrations of drugs in baby Amber and baby Ahmad. DeBerk was swiftly convicted on multiple counts of murder, and both appeals failed. Days after the second failed appeal, in 2006, DeBerk suffered a stroke in her prison cell. The guards on hand assumed she was faking it to win sympathy. They let her lie there for 10 hours before calling a doctor. As a result, DeBerk ended up partially paralyzed and unable to speak. But honestly, people felt little sympathy for a serial killer who preyed on children and old people. After the stroke, DeBerk was shipped to prison and left to rot for the rest of her life. Except things didn't quite work out that way. Less than 5 years later, the most prolific serial killer in Dutch history would walk out of prison a free woman. Because despite everything you've just heard, Lucia DeBerk never killed a single soul.
Our bodies come in different shapes and sizes, so doesn't it make sense that our weight loss plans should too? That's the beauty of Noom. They build a personal plan that factors in dietary restrictions, medical issues, and other personal needs so your plan works for you. Noom doesn't restrict or shame when you want to treat yourself. Their flexible program focuses on progress instead of perfection. You don't have to give up carbs or anything. And with their daily lessons, you can learn something new about your food choices every day. After just a few days of using the app, I learned how to recognize cues for overeating and how to choose the right foods to feel full. Stay focused on what's important to you with Noom's psychology and biology-based approach. Sign up for your trial today at Noom.com. That's Noom.com. And check out Noom's first ever cookbook, The Noom Kitchen, for 100 healthy and delicious recipes to promote better living. Available to buy now wherever books are sold.
Lucia DeBerk owes her salvation to two tenacious siblings. One was Mette de Nieuw, a Dutch doctor. De Nieuw's brother was married to the chief pediatrician who had unearthed the suspicious cases at the children's hospital. De Nieuw saw how obsessed her sister-in-law was with the case, and she got interested herself. And why not? It involved a serial killer. It seemed fascinating. But when Dr. De Nieuw began reviewing the medical files in the DeBerk case, she felt a pit form in her stomach. In the majority of the deaths, there was no evidence whatsoever of foul play. No poison, no violence, nothing. The only supposed evidence was the fact that DeBerk was present. The case seemed flimsy. Now, there was baby Ahmad, who had overdosed on sedatives. Except, De Nieuw noticed that he'd been prescribed alarmingly high doses by his doctor. There were also instructions to give him even more sedatives if he appeared restless. From what De Nieuw saw, an overdose was almost inevitable. De Nieuw approached her sister-in-law with these findings. But her sister-in-law told her to back off. She knew DeBerk, knew what a monster the woman was. A huge fight erupted, and De Nieuw and the sister-in-law stopped speaking. De Nieuw's brother cut off contact as well. Luckily, De Nieuw had another brother, Ton Dirksen, a philosophy professor. When De Nieuw mentioned the case to him, he started sleuthing around as well, focusing on baby Amber. Again, Amber had a dozen times more digoxin in her blood than she should have. But it turns out there's a natural molecule in the body that resembles digoxin. Indeed, the drug mimics this molecule. Unfortunately, the police used a cheap test that could not distinguish between the natural molecule and the drug. Dirksen convinced the police to try a more sensitive test that could distinguish. And according to that test, she had only 3.5 times more than she should have. And even that figure was artificially high. Remember, the test involved fluids from the gauze left over from Amber's autopsy. That gauze had been sitting around for a while, and some of the liquid had evaporated. That increased the concentration of the drug remaining behind, pushing the number too high. In reality, the concentration in Amber was normal. Next up, Ton Dirksen began dismantling the statistical case against DeBerk. During his research, Dirksen came across another sad death at the children's hospital. It involved a baby named Kamal. He had overdosed on sedatives. The cases looked identical. So why wasn't DeBerk charged in Kamal's case? Simply because DeBerk wasn't working that day. That told Dirksen something, that the people investigating DeBerk had been biased in gathering their data. What they should have done is pulled up a list of all unexplained deaths, tried to determine if each one looked suspicious, and then figured out whether DeBerk was present. Instead, the hospital staff did the opposite. They determined when DeBerk was present, then started fishing for reasons why the unexplained deaths looked suspicious. It was a textbook example of confirmation bias, letting your prior beliefs sway your interpretation. Dirksen found other problems too. Again, the police searched for unexplained deaths in DeBerk's ward for 3 years prior to her starting there. They found zero. Unfortunately, the name of the ward had changed right before DeBerk joined. So in the database, it just looked like there were no unexplained deaths because the police were searching under the wrong name. Dirksen soon got the records for the correct ward and found 7 unexplained deaths in the 3 years prior to DeBerk starting. Overall, then, there were 7 unexplained deaths before her arrival, 8 afterward. And remember, DeBerk was not present for 2 of those 8. So in the 3 years before a serial killer arrives, there are 7 unexplained deaths. Then the serial killer shows up, and there's just 6? Does that make sense? Equally bad, investigators had examined data only from the pediatric and the elderly care hospitals. They ignored 3 other hospitals where DeBerk worked, where there were no suspicious deaths. And think about it. What segments of the population are most prone to dying? Infants and old people. That alone made DeBerk's death count seem far higher than normal. With this better data, Dirksen approached some actual, professional statisticians. They re-ran the numbers on the likelihood of DeBerk being present for so many unexplained deaths. And the number they got dropped dramatically. From 1 chance in 342 million to 1 in 1,200. Now, 1 in 1,200 still might seem suspicious. But there were 250,000 nurses in Holland. So in a normal year, a few hundred of them would be present for as many deaths as DeBerk. It was indeed all just bad luck. Dirksen and his sister Danu began evangelizing about DeBerk's innocence. It was not easy to get people to listen. Even the Dutch Minister of Justice refused to listen at first. An occult-loving, serial-killing nurse was a much juicier story anyway. But the siblings' doggedness paid off. Through media appearances and grassroots organizing, they won DeBerk a new trial in 2010. After her stroke, she still struggled to walk, but she had recovered enough of her speaking ability to testify on her own behalf. During the trial, her defense lawyers hammered the prosecution's case, pointing out the biased stats and the sloppy drug tests. And incredibly, the prosecution agreed. As the trial was wrapping up, they actually asked the judge to free DeBerk. Even the prosecutors did not believe in her guilt anymore. As a result, DeBerk was acquitted of all charges in April 2010. She bravely limped out of prison under her own power, a free woman at last. Sadly, DeBerk's case is far from being the only miscarriage of justice due to bad statistics. In fact, I've put together a bonus episode at patreon.com/disappearingspoon about other instances. Most of the accused are young mothers who not only endured the deaths of their children, but were then charged with murder and suffered public hatred. They're terrifying cases of math gone wrong. That's patreon.com/disappearingspoon. So what lessons should we take from the DeBerk case? First, medicine is mysterious. Patients doing well one day suddenly die all the time. It's sad, but it's no one's fault. Second, there are statistical lessons. Gather your data fairly, without bias. And when examining data, don't let your prior beliefs sway your interpretation. Third, be careful of self-righteousness. DeBerk's accusers thought that they had uncovered a serial killer, and they were so determined to root out the evil that they lost all objectivity. Fourth, although these were not factors in the DeBerk case, there are other things to consider with hospital deaths. Sometimes nurses are just bad, clumsy or whatever. That doesn't mean they're murderers. Or sometimes the best nurses get the toughest cases, the people most likely to die anyway. So a higher death rate is an artifact, not a crime. Even time of day can affect things. People on overnight shifts make more mistakes because they're sleep deprived. And specialty doctors usually aren't available overnight, which again leads to higher death rates. Heck, some nurses just work more, double shifts. And of course, the more you're around the hospital, the more deaths there will be on your watch. You have to be very careful with statistics. But the most important lesson is the hardest one to swallow, that human beings are simply bad at statistics. We have poor intuitions for numbers and coincidences. We hate randomness, especially around death. We want someone to blame, so we invent patterns and see things that are not there. Unfortunately, these errors are very hard to root out because they're built into our brains. Remember, the law professor who calculated the 1 in 342 million figure was not some bumbling fool. He had a degree in stats, yet he still made ghastly, life-destroying decisions. He and others were so convinced that they had uncovered a monster that they never stopped to consider if they were doing something monstrous themselves. This is the Disappearing Spoon podcast, brought to you by the Science History Institute. Be sure to check out their in-depth science history podcast, Distillations. You can find it anywhere you get your podcasts or on their website, distillations.org. You can find more incredible stories in my books or at samkeen.com. You can also book me as a speaker there for your school or event. If you like this podcast, please spread the word and support it at patreon.com/disappearingspoon. You can also get bonus episodes and signed books at Patreon. This episode was written by me, Sam Keen. It was produced by Mariel Carr, Rigoberto Hernandez, and Sarah Kaplan. Our sound design, scoring, and mixing is by Row Home Productions. Row Home's creative director is Alex Lewis. John Myers is Row Home's executive producer. Thanks for listening.
Row Home Productions.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Get 16-ounce packs of flavorful Angus 90% lean ground sirloin for $4.99 each with a digital coupon. Then buy two, get two free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.